And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're here Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. We also put the podcasts at the radio shows page of richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes. On the homepage, you will see the SoundCloud playlist player. You will see that there on the homepage, and we certainly hope that you will avail yourself also by going to the radio shows page, going to the files, going to the interviews, but also going to our guests' website, because we'll be linked to them so that you can get more information and glean from them wonderful things that they have to offer here on the program we are going to provide you with. And links galore. We do have a Facebook page. We do have a Twitter account. We don't use them much. And so just go to richarddugan.com. I've questioned over and over again people saying, why do I need a Facebook account when I have a website? And of course, their answer obviously is, well, because you're going to reach so many more people. And, all right. But I'm also on LinkedIn. So, you know, there you go. Well, today I think we're going to have a really good time. We're going to get some definitions of terms and understand about a true story of past horror, present healing, and permanent grace. And we're going to talk with our guest here on the program. Her name is Kim Chadwell, and she has written a book about her life and times, as it were, Dripping in Grace. And Kim, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here with you today.
This is going to be an interesting program, I believe, because we're going to talk about some things that most people they don't think too much about. And what we like to do at the beginning of some of our programs, especially when it comes to some of these terms, is we like to define them. We like to have them defined, actually, by our guests. So, what do you mean by grace? Because it sounds like water, some kind of liquid somewhere, if we're dripping in it.
Right. Well, grace, you know, has many type of terms and titles. But in my perspective, to say that, and excuse me to the listeners, I am overcoming some laryngitis. But grace, to me, is saying the other person is worth it. And not only are they worth it, but it's an encompassing blanket where it says, the price has been paid, of course, by Jesus Christ, but I am willing to say to you, you are worth it to me, that I'm going to put a blanket over what happened or the situation that occurred, and I'm not going to go there and look at that anymore. Instead, I'm going to look at you as a person that's worth it to move forward with and move on with our lives.
Well, it is something that I find interesting in your definition that I was pondering this, and just as a point of reference, our listeners already know this. I worked for 15 years back in the 80s and early 90s for a Christian radio station, and I kept hearing terminology and verbiage, if you will, about how we were such lowly worms. We were just, you know, just despicable, and primarily because of original sin, you know. And and I thought, wait a minute, it didn't make any sense. Because you know, we're told in Matthew, it talks about how, you know, the birds and the animals, they're all taken care of. You know, they don't worry about where their next meal's coming from or where they're going to lay their head or where they're going to live or any of those things, you know, and they're well cared for. They don't worry about it. And what the heck are you worrying about? But what that brought to my mind was the other passage where it talks about be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I thought, wait a minute, okay, so what does that mean? What's the definition there? And I pondered that. I just thought about it and thought about it, and I thought, well, God isn't good or evil. God isn't good or bad, light or dark, left or right, etc. He's not dual. He's not a dualistic being, right, in that context. So I thought, then that means that God is, just is, like it says in, I think it's in Psalms, so I am God. I am. So being perfect is just to be who you are. And if we had no value to God, then what would be, then he'd just say, yeah, they don't have any value, so I'm not going to sacrifice anything. I'm not even right. going to cross the street to help these people, these individuals that I created. That made no sense to me. So when, you know, when we talk about these kinds of things and we get those kinds of messages from outside ourselves, from all kinds of other sources around us, whether it's the radio and TV, whether it's newspapers, whether it's our schools, whether it's our churches, whether it's our parents, whether it's our peers, you know, bullies and all these kinds of things. And they're the ones that we listen to more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You come from a background. Now, I have to say that it's an interesting background because we've actually had atheists on this program talking about their perspectives on things. And one of the I'm going to say, more honest approaches to, shall we say, the divine, I don't know. To be agnostic is to say, I don't know. And to me, that would be the place where I would much rather start. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out like everybody else, as opposed to taking the position, there isn't one. There is no God. There is no creator, divine power, universal source, et cetera, et cetera. But you, that's where you were coming from. There is none. There isn't one. Is that right?
That there isn't a God?
That's where you came from originally, prior to becoming a believer.
Well, of course, yes. You know, I had a tremendous amount of abuse and what happened in my childhood. And, you know, I was an orphan. There was a lot of tremendous trauma in my life. And I didn't really know what was real and wasn't because of all the things that I had seen and been told, no, that didn't happen. Oh, that's funny when it wasn't funny. Or you can't cry. That didn't hurt. And on my situation, you know, my real father shot my mother with a shotgun. And, you know, many, many things happened and the state got involved and then we were put in foster care. And then in foster care, someone tried to kill me and it was supposed to be someone that was taking care of me. I was smothered. I was tied up with ropes. I had, you name it, it was done to me. And I suffered a lot. But one thing that was interesting is I heard a voice. I didn't know what the voice was. I didn't know who it was, but I know there was somebody that was speaking to me. And so when I landed into my early adulthood, I began a search to try to understand what was real and what wasn't, because I'd endured so much pain and difficulty and hardship and alienation and rejection. And then you go into adulthood and you try to land on your feet and be happy. And that's thus what began my search to find out what was real and what wasn't.
So how did that begin for you? Because, you know, when people, and I guess I'm fortunate that I don't come from that quite a severe background, but I certainly have known a lot of people who have. And I know that just getting through from day to day is a heck of a challenge, let alone then dealing with, you know, why am I here, starting to answer those universal questions, and is there a God? And, you know, if there's a God, why have I been going through all of this mess? You know, I'm not Job, you know. Mm-hmm. So what was the turning point? What was the event in your life that said, I need to be searching? This is an important thing. Otherwise, I'm not going to survive this lifetime.
Right. You know, even in my early teens, I attempted to take my life. I did not want to live. I was just so wounded by many people, and I had no one to turn to and nobody that I felt would understand. So in my young adulthood, you know, I did go to Bible college, and I made a lot of good choices, and I was searching, but I never really internalized it and made it me, excuse me again. But it was more on the outside. And so I continued to put more knowledge. I continued to be more busy. We were raising our children. And I felt like I was doing all the right things. But yet I continued to feel that there was a hole inside me. I felt like I stood out in a crowd or in a group. And it just seemed like there was always something wrong with me. And what happened was, you know, I was searching the scriptures, and two turning points happened to me. One is I had a vision, and I had a great illustrator that I got her to draw the vision, which is in the book. But another thing happened I was reading the scripture, and the very last chapter of Genesis, I was reading about Joseph, And of course, you know, I put him in the book also and got some illustrations in there. But we know basically the story of Joseph and his coat of many colors, but there's so much more of a backstory. But in the last chapter of Genesis, when his brothers came to him, this was 17 years after he'd already saved the family. They came to him again thinking that he was going to do an ultimate act of revenge. But his statement was a turning point for me. And he said this, he said, "What you intended to be for harm for me, that God is now using it for good to save the lives of many." That's sort of the nutshell. Mm-hmm. And so I remember staring at this particular scripture. I have it circled in my Bible, and it just sort of jumped out. And I thought, all of these things in my life that has been done intentionally by different people and really, really harmed me and really, really hurt me, that I realized that if I made the right choices, that I could turn around and use it for good and use it to save the lives of many. And so I tell many people, I didn't want to just survive. I wanted to overcome. But I didn't want to just overcome. I wanted to be a victor. But I didn't want to just be a victor. I wanted to be a leader. So now when I share my message and when I speak, I want to say, look, you know, I'm a little ahead of you on the path. And I turn around and say, no, go this way. Okay, dude, go there. Because I didn't have any guidance to help me through the suffering and even overcoming my suffering. And so this is what the book, Dripping in Grace, is the true story of past horror, present healing, and permanent grace. So I did have the past horror. I went through the journey of permanent, of present healing. And it took a lot of work. And forgiveness is a choice. Joseph, it came down to one word. It was choice. Because you see, forgiveness, I believe, is the ultimate hurdle for man. It's above temptation, because we have scripture to help us with temptation. You know, flee from the devil, he'll flee from you. Oh, you'll never be tempted beyond what you can bear. So we have all these tools. But forgiveness comes ultimately down to one word. It's an act of obedience, but it's a choice. It's not about how much it made you bleed. It's not about how your life was destroyed. It's not how much it hurt. And it's not about the betrayal. Yes, that is what we experienced. But ultimately, it comes to one word, and that is to make the choice to forgive and to hand grace. And that is a great example with the whole entire story of Joseph that all went on. And seven times in the story of Joseph, seven times, he removed himself from the room for weeping. And it's naive to think he was weeping with joy. This man had been stripped of his identity. He'd been put in a dungeon. He was a prisoner. He was a slave. He was violated in many, many ways. And then years later, they're the ones, the perpetrators that did it to him. And he had a choice. You know, he had every ounce of power to totally have them killed and mauled in horrible ways. But instead, he chose to forgive and give grace and give it abundantly, not just a sliver or a loaf of bread or a little meal in a bag. He moved the entire family, put them in plush pastures and beautiful homes, and he cared for them all the way up until his death.
You know, it's interesting. The modern day example of that, of course, is Nelson Mandela, who was put in prison for 25 years. And yes. I remember hearing the story about how he, sitting there in prison, he had a choice. He consciously knew he had a choice. He could continue to go down the road that he was going and probably within a short period of time wind up dead. Or he could go the other direction. And, of course, we all know the story, how that ended up. He became the president of South Africa and abolished apartheid and so forth. The other aspect of forgiveness I find interesting, and actually there are two, actually. One is, for me, the aspect of, especially in our day and age with a lot of the challenges that we face on all sides, it's one thing. And I had to deal with this, and it took a long time for the words to actually come out of my mouth. I could see them, I could hear them in my head, but I couldn't say them. It just rubbed me the wrong way to say to a particular individual, I forgive you. But I realized that that was only half the equation. The other half was, I forgive me for allowing myself to be taken in, to blah, 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 whatever it was that I hold responsibility too. It isn't just the persecutor, it's the persecuted who has taken on the perception, if you will, if I may, of the victim. And we get to that place where we have to say, look, enough, I'm not carrying this anymore. I'm forgiving you. I may still not like you, but I forgive you. But I forgive me too. But then there's a second element, which is also an equation, and you alluded to that initially. There's an equation in the New Testament that the question was asked, well, but Master, how many times are we supposed to forgive? Well, the equals sign is followed by a minimum of 490 times. Yeah. Because it's 70 times 7. Mm-hmm. So if you can keep count, okay.
In a single day.
If you can keep count, okay, great. Then when you get to 491, you don't have to forgive them anymore. But but until you have a little clicker in your hand that keeps track. But that's something that I found very interesting, and I've actually found it somewhat liberating. But I will tell you that there was a phrase that I had to also utter prior to the forgiveness part. I had to acknowledge this person that I had the problems with. I had to say, and I didn't like to because I have great reverence for teachers, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I do not want to behave or how I do not want to be or how I do not want to, whatever the category is. That mm-hmm. was a tough one, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I was able to get to the next step of I forgive you, I forgive me. And now I don't care. It doesn't matter. And I'm not carrying that anymore. Is that's the process that you are actually talking about as we go through our day-to-day lives, whether it's somebody who has gone after us, okay, or somebody who's just cut us off in traffic and they are oblivious of who, they don't know who you are, Kim. They didn't get up this morning mm-hmm. and say, let's get Kim Chadwell. Let's get her.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that too when I got upset with drivers here in Santa Barbara. They say they didn't get up and say, let's get Richard. And it was a little frustrating because it's like, you mean they don't care enough about me
mm-hmm.
that they're going to be that
you
unconscious?
Know, it's interesting what you shared is one of the things that I put in my book is that I've heard many people, including Christians, say, I forgive, but I won't forget. I'll forgive, but I don't want to speak to you again. I'll forgive, but I only will see you once a year at Christmas. I'll forgive, but don't expect me to sit at the table with you. I'll forgive, but. That has nothing to do with forgiveness. Those are degrees of toleration.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is to completely give total choice of grace to that person and to be willing to share heaven with that person. And that's where that was part of my deepest part of my journey is when I realized what was bothering me, although I was forgiving people from day to day in my interactions of life, but I realized I had not forgiven it. I hadn't forgiven them, although I was functioning as if I did. And what I shared in the book after I had received the vision is that I got on my knees. It wasn't a complex prayer. It was very simple. But I said, Lord, help me to forgive her, to forgive them and love her like you do. And then I said, and help me to want to share heaven with them. Because what happens is when you understand that there were three that hung that day, the mm-hmm. humble, the holy, the prideful. One said, oh, if you're Jesus, if you're the Savior, get us all down. The other one, Lord, remember me. And you have to understand that our greatest offender, our greatest perpetrator, our greatest wounder, at the very last of their life, can take that mask off their face and say, Lord, remember me, the one that's hurt so many. They die. They receive that same grace. And they may actually be standing at the gate when we get there. Are we going to say, I'll pass. I don't want to go. They didn't deserve it. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you are willing to realize that your greatest wounder, perpetrator, offender, cheater, liar, thief against you can receive the greatest grace, even more than we received, because mm-hmm. they wanted it more. Yeah. Not that they deserved it more, but they needed it more because of their offenses in life, that they can be the one standing there. And that's when I realized that is what total forgiveness is. That's what total grace is. And then, like you said, the 70 times 7 per day. Mm. And then when you realize that we are just another beggar seeking a piece of bread, also when our sins are exposed and we don't want our skeletons out in the closet, but somehow we sure can notice that other person. And my journey as I grew as a Christian, I was trying to work on me. I wasn't looking for an answer. I was just seeking for me. I want to become a better Christian. I was seeking all that knowledge. And as I did, I started focusing on things that where I had wounded people, I'd hurt people. I needed to be accountable. I needed to face some things. And as I did, my heart started to change. And then I nestled into the category of forgiveness, you know, and I had carried deep wounds for a long, long time. And I became totally and completely set free. And it's not that cliche, oh, forgiveness is for you. Well, you know, it is, but it's also for that other person because you're projecting all of that. You're rejecting them. You're saying they're not good enough. You don't want to be around them. You're going to tell the story. You're going to, and like you said, that we live this life as victim. We put the mask of servant under the title. I mean, we put the title of servant with the mask of victim. You know, we have all this stuff underneath. We have a lot of people in leadership, a lot of people standing in the pulpits that have not faced the trueness and the realness of forgiveness that's necessary in this life.
Yeah.
And that's one of the greatest, and it is the bridge. I mean, that came from the lips of Christ. It was a command. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive. And that was the vision that I had, and there's four parts to it.
Hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, too, that I discovered as I was working those 15 years back in the 80s and early 90s was, you know, what a lot of people refer to as the transgressions of those people in the pulpits, you know, the televangelists, the radio broadcasters and so forth. And after I left and I started working in other areas and I started hearing about some of these people passing on, I have to say one of the thoughts that came to me was, well, at least now they know the truth, you know. But there was another element that popped up as you were sharing that, and that is when you talk about forgiving them, and I have to tell you that when I was working for that station, I was challenged on more than one occasion. I was challenged to the extent that someone actually said to me, I don't believe you're saved and ready to meet God. And the bottom line is, we don't know that other person's heart who transgressed against us. We don't know what's going on inside of them. All we know is the outward, manifestations or expressions. That's all we know. We don't know what that guy on the pulpit's going through inside.
We don't know their journey. We don't know their story. We don't know their wounds. And part of one of the chapters in my book, it talks about if you could get behind the story of the life of the person who wounded you, who cheated you, who lied, who abused you, even, that most of the time, their wounds and their story can be unbelievable. And we don't know what's going on in another person's life. And it's interesting, just a couple of weeks ago, I was on live TV in an interview in Atlanta. And I met someone, it was a woman at a store who was actually helping me pick out an outfit. And got to chatting. She's from another country. She's from Iran, but a wonderful, pleasant sales lady. Got to chit-chatting about my book, Forgiveness, Grace, blah, blah, blah. And she said something, and it has stuck in my head. And she said, you know, with her accent, you know how when I must forgive, because she was very sunny type personality. I said, what's the secret to your joy? It just radiates from you. And she said, you know, when I think about that someone I must forgive, I think of them as a baby. And I love babies. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, go back to when that person was a baby. That person was innocent and beautiful and pure. But then things happened to that person before they got to me. And, you know, I have thought and thought about that several times since I met her. And I'll go back in my mind, oh, that person, you know, was a baby once too. And they were beautiful and cute. You know, just like when you read interviews of someone that was maybe a mass murderer or did terrible offenses. And I interviewed the parents and they say, oh, he was just such a good little boy, you know, because at some point that person was, he or she was. So when we are in situations with other people, we don't know the condition of their heart. We don't know the condition of their wounds and their journey and where they are. As you know, I've always said, you have to love people to the cross, not judge them to the cross. They will respond to your love before they ever respond to a message of Christ. If you are harsh and judgmental, and then you want to feed them a meal of Jesus, they're not listening to that. They're watching you and how you handle adversity. And truly, that is the test of Christianity, is that.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to be good. Just like I said, you know, Jesus said, well, if you're only good to those that are good to you, well, even the heathen do that. The difference in us is what we do to those that wrong us, what we do to those that are the offenders of society and the wounders of society. How do we treat them?
We're talking with Kim Chantwell, and we're talking about Chantwell, and we're talking about Dripping in Grace. We are discussing her life and times, as it were, the true story of past horrors, present healing, and permanent grace here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Kim Chadwell, and we're talking about her latest work and the work that she's doing these days. Dripping in Grace is the title of this this particular book that we are discussing. Again, the true story of past horrors, present healing, and permanent grace. And it's I have to say that you have chosen, and I don't know specifically where this is, but all I know is based upon the information that I've received, that you're living in a rural part of the country, which is a fantastic place to live because you're not inundated by a lot of things. I happen to live with my wife up on the mountains above Santa Barbara, so we're in a rural area as well, and we see all kinds of wonderful wildlife as well as all kinds of different things. It's a lot quieter where we are, less hurried. Sometimes we cannot wait to get up the hill, the 7 miles, up to the top of the hill and get home and get away from this frenetic energy that is going on down here. At the same time, there are times when, you know, gee, there are some things I would love to be going to, some events to attend and this and that and the other, but is it worth it? Is it really worth going down into into that arena, as it were? Sometimes it is. Sometimes you never know who you're going to meet. You never know who you're going to come across. And that is another thing that to keep in mind. This is not getting into politics by any means, but it certainly speaks volumes to what you said before the break about people watching you, not listening to you. They don't want to hear what you have to say. They want to see how you're living. And it's been said in these modern high-tech times, with social media abounding, young people are being warned left and right to be careful what they post on social media. To me, that's the same thing. That's people watching you. Be careful, because schools that you may want to attend in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, they may be doing a search for your Facebook page or whatever social media page is to see what you've been posting, pictures, content, and so forth. Employers, you know, even individuals who may find you, hey, you could be a prospective mate. You just never know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to me, the same thing applies to people back, you know, even when I was a kid growing up, there are things I should not have done. And fortunately, there wasn't social media, so very few people knew about my personal transgressions, whether they were to me or to someone else. It always seems to me that, you know, people get all up in arms on the one hand over the behavior of someone from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Supposedly it's going to impact their behavior from 40 years ago to the present. But the reality is, it's all of those events in their life that have made them who they are today. Whether,
yes,
in your case, you were able to turn that adversity around or not. Or others who were not able to, and yet, you know, they're not living terrible lives, but they still have that thing hanging over them. And now, of course, we're hearing, as you and I are talking, we're hearing left and right. I got to tell you, as a man in this society today, you know, it was bad enough when Harvey Weinstein was brought out into the public for his transgressions. But man, it's the accusation is not innocent until proven guilty. The accusation is the sword through the heart of the accused. It's over. Mm-hmm. In this country now, the perception is, I'm sorry, Kim Chadwell just accused you, Richard Dugan, of blah, 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 blah. So now the rest of the world says, oh, Richard, you're guilty. She's only said whatever she said, but now you're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hear about, well, wait a minute. I thought in this country it was innocent until proven guilty. Not anymore.
And it's such an example of twisted grace, of twisted growth. Because if any of us, including myself, if we wanted to display our behavior at age 20 or age 18 or at age 15, when we are learning and growing, and yes, of course, assault, those are pretty serious things. Those are social boundaries that anyone is not to cross. But the point that you're making is so true that it's just an accusation. It's mud to throw on the wall, and that mud better stick. Because I said it is, and it's going to stick. No, we're not going to do due process. No, we're not going to do thorough investigation, or the thorough investigation doesn't apply. It's just because I've got a big microphone, and my microphone is going to be louder than yours, and I'm going to destroy your life based on an accusation, based on something that happened a long time ago. And I can tell you, for me, and again, I say to the listeners, forgive my voice from overcoming laryngitis, but for me, I would hate, you know, not even, you know, as we're sort of alluding to a situation happening out in the political world right now, but I would hate for me right now, something that I did at age 16, and I can look back and think of some mistakes I made in those age group time frame. I would hate for that to be displayed. I am thankful that I have matured more, that I've overcome, that I've repented, and I've moved on, and I've grown. If any of us got to dealing with issues at age 16, 18, and 20, 22, whatever, and keep going, we're supposed to be growing and progressing and maturing. It's an ongoing journey. It's all the way to the end of our lives that we are to continue to chase and perfect the behavior of Christ. And then when we get there, we receive the new body, and we receive the new cleansing of just all the cares being gone. And it's too bad that this is happening politically, but it's too bad that it's hanging on within Christian circles. We just don't let stuff go. We don't let the person repent and grow and keep going. Nope, we're not going to speak to them anymore. That's terrible. And everybody talks about it, but nobody wants to open their closet and put the spotlight on the closet and let all those skeletons and all those bones and all those rags and all the things that we each have in our closet. We have them. But for some reason, we like to be the chicken that likes to peck and peck and peck and hen peck somebody until we see their blood. And then we peck because there's blood, and we peck some more and peck some more. But we certainly don't want to peck on our own spots. Which is exactly what Christ said. He said, you fool, you look over there at what's in the speck in their eye. You got a plank sticking out of yours. And that's what I did. As I was growing as a Christian, I started working on myself. I started working on accountability. I started working on repentance. I started working on confession. I started really working on accountability and application. And then I realized, wow, my heart shifted. You know, I had to face some things that I have done, and I really did. And I wrote some letters to people. The word talks about that we are to confess our sins. I realized that, yes, I'd repented, but had I confessed each of my sins? So I sat down the first time I prayed in this time of my life. I prayed for 3 straight hours. I dealt with confession of my own self. And as I got the focus off of others and my wounds, and my victimishness of myself, which was true, I was a victim, but I still had to deal with what I was doing and how I'd acted and what I was doing to others. So I started facing that. My heart started to shift. Then I moved into forgiveness, and my heart had matured. My spirit had matured. And I realized, wow, had I really forgiven this stuff? Yeah, it was pretty big stuff. I'd wept a lot of tears and still can. I still do. The wounds were real and are real, but I look at them completely different now. I've been completely accountable within my own life. And as I became that way, I began to realize those that had hurt me also had been hurt, but they deserved my grace, my forgiveness, my willingness to say, you're worth it. You're worth it.
and you're worth sharing heaven with. And then to make sure that I was really, really recovering the way I wanted to in this state as a Christian, I began to pray, Lord, I want so-and-so to greet me at the gate. I want so-and-so to be there when I get to heaven. That's when you've completely forgiven that person.
Yeah. And it's really hard for a lot of folks to start taking a look at the list of individuals who have transgressed against them, you know, and then go down that list and begin that forgiveness process, because in our society today, and I have to tell you that what I was hearing, for example, again, not trying not to get political here, but what I was hearing during the 2016 campaign was victimhood, victimhood. America is the victim. We are the victim, victim. That's all I heard. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Just yesterday, before you entered the race, we were feeling pretty darn good, and then life was good. Yeah, we have our dark sides as a country. Every country does, as does every person. We have what they refer to as, you know, that shadow side, you know, as we've discussed. But, you know, we've come a long way, and all of a sudden, we're right back. I remember when that whole construct was brought up in self-help and psychology back in the 80s and early 90s with the books that came out where you'd blame your parents, you know, for, mm-hmm. for your problems. Oh, mm-hmm. it's mom and dad's fault because they did this, they did that, they did. It's the teacher's fault because they did. That's why I am the way I am. It's not my fault. I'm not responsible. And that was one of the things that I always took umbrage with when I was working for that station, is because I thought either you're 100% responsible or you're not. Not some outside force. It's you. You are personally responsible. And I've often used the analogy of an individual walking in this beautiful green meadow. And they're walking through this meadow. Their hands are outstretched and they're cupped together, you know, like they're holding a ball. Mm-hmm. But in their hands is their personal individual will. And they're saying, I just want to do God's will. I just want to do God's will. And they toss it up into the air. And God is watching and catches their will and begins to compress it in his hands. And tears streaming down his face, anthropomorphically speaking, because he's moved by the fact that one of his own creation wants to do his God's will. So what he does is he hurls that compressed individual will back at that person, smacks them square in the forehead and says, then do something with the life I gave you. You're not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you don't understand. And you've already talked about those forces of specifically forgiveness leading to grace. Those forces we do understand. We just are unwilling to accept the realities of that. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. And you said something that just triggered a thought with me. We are a victim until we forgive. We can remain a victim. And there's a lot of attention that you get by being a victim. You get sympathy. You get special treatment. You get excused. But once we forgive, we're no longer a victim. It's over. And there's so many people that stick to the title of victim. They love to tell their story. Just like you said, they love to point to that. But I didn't want to point to my past. I didn't want to walk through life with a limp. I didn't want to walk with crutches. I wanted to run free. And in order to do that, I could not be a victim. Think about the people, and I don't know their names, but I'm sure different ones know it. But think of the people that have no arms or legs and they're motivational speakers. The people that the conjoined twins or the boys of the Sudan or the people that are born blind, no fingers, no whatever. And they become master speakers, artists, multimillionaires. What is it in them what is it? They didn't get luck. They got cheated in the deck of cards like I felt. What is it? You know what it is? It's choice and forgiveness and moving on and stepping up and making the most of your life and having an attitude of grace and happiness. And you and then there's people, they come in on a wheelchair, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the man's name. He has no arms and legs, and he's requested all over the world. He can't tie his own shoes, wipe his own face. He hobbles around when he's out of the wheelchair. And the place is packed.
Are you talking about the thalidomide baby? The gentleman?
No, I'm sorry. I can't think of his name. I'll think of it. But anyway, that's the point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if he walked around with a chip on his shoulder, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. You think people are going to crowd around to listen to him? Of course not. They're looking at the fact that he overcame and he moved forward and not only overcame, but became a victor and now a leader. And so I want to reiterate this. You are a victim until you forgive. Mm. And if you still feel like you're a victim, you haven't completely forgiven.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And I think that when, you know, when we hear especially our political leaders giving speeches, and I remember 2000 when one of the candidates was giving a speech and talking about, here are all the things that we, the citizenry, he and us, we were going to do together. And I'm thinking, oh, that's great. I think that's wonderful that we're all going to have an opportunity to participate and do something. And I was all for it. I thought, this is fantastic. It was all inclusive, right? And now here's what the government is going to do for you. And I turned him off. And I said, no, because you first unlocked the chains and dropped the shackles from our necks and our wrists and our ankles, and you set us free, and then you shackled us up again. Because you're telling us, and now here's what the government is going to do for you. Now, I'm, again, not wanting conditional freedom. And I'm, again, not wanting to get political, mind you. But you can't have it both ways. You can't be free and enslaved at the same time.
Yes.
In spite of what Paul said about, you know, don't fear the one who can heal the, kill the body. Fear the one who can kill the soul. You know, and, again, I go back to Nelson Mandela. He made a choice. Look how his life turned out. It was just absolutely incredible. And many others as well. It's interesting. I find... that this is something that's really, really needed today. And what's really sad is the fact that so many people have indeed, they've bought into the victim message. They haven't been transgressed against per se, okay? But they've bought into and accepted that message. And then they've gone out and they've said and done things based upon that message that now those people who suffered at their hand, they now have to get forgiveness for and then forgive themselves. Whereas if we hadn't gone down that road, but some people have been saying to me, well, you know, that this is just a pendulum swinging. This is just the way it goes, the cycle back and forth and back. And I'm sitting here going, enough already, enough with the back and forth. Let's stop this nonsense.
Yeah, we've become a society. I wrote an article on this. We are the offended. It's our society's new name. We're just offended. And it's interesting. The one who's offended gets to make the rules, you know, because, you know, you can be doing something and suddenly someone says that offended me. Well, maybe it's no. And they start giving all the reasons, because then that way they don't have to deal with their life. They just get to be offended. And the mature Christian, the mature person begins to realize, you know, I've got to set myself free of this victim mentality. I've got to realize that this did happen to me, but there was purpose behind it. And I said that in my book, in Joseph as well. There is purpose behind pain if we're willing to look for it. If we're willing to look for what it's doing in us, what it's developing and maturing in us. We say we believe. We say we have faith. We raise our hands and go to church and sing the songs. We say we read the Bible. But the first words, and I put this in my book, why is it the first words out of a Christian's mouth when something happens to them? You know what the first word is? Why? We know why. Our journey is death. Jesus said, remember, if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. Remember, they hated me first if they hate you. You have to know this is the journey. The loss of jobs, the rejection, the alienation, the mistreatment, the cheating against us and pushing against the light. And it's push, push, push. And we walk around and we wonder, why did this happen? It is our journey to say, look, Bubba, this is the rubber hits the road. Did you really mean it in church yesterday? Oh, now that you lost your job today, you question everything? The lights just went out. Faith is darkness. It's seeing light in the darkness because we don't look with our physical eyes. And I ended my book with a phrase that said this. This is our journey in life. It is to have character in the storm, faith in the darkness, and forgiveness in the light. Because every bit of faith is when the lights go out. Everything else is obedience. Well, we can say this and this today, and we can say this and this right now. Well, the lights are on. There's money in the bank, and this is going okay. Well, tomorrow the lights went out. Oh, no. Oh, why? I don't get it. I go to church every week. Well, I don't get it. They cheated me. They, you know, my partner did this to me, in business or this and this. And yes, it hurts. The wounding and the bleeding is real. And God gave me an illustration. You know, someone might say, well, I haven't been abused. I'm not quite sure with your story. Well, let me tell you, whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, at some point in your life, you're going to have to deal with the issue of forgiveness, period. It's just the element of life. And for me to say, if I put my arm out and you put your arm out and I have a cut that's really big and long, but yours is a small cut, it's still a cut. It's still a wound. It's still going to require the same healing process. One might need just a little bit more attention, but we're both going to use the same antiseptic. We're both going to check it and make sure it's healing. And it's going to have the same bandage, and it might have a tiny bigger scar. It might have a little scar, but we're still going to have a spot where that happened. And what I share with everyone is this: God uses the least likely if we are willing to allow ourselves to be broken. And when he picks those pieces up and puts the vessel back together, the cracks are visible. And I love it so much because his light can be seen through our cracks, my cracks. We're not going to be the same vessel after it's all over with. And there's many, many people, including me, in situations that happened to me, destroyed me, devastated me. I didn't think I was going to recover, but I did. And I look back and I'm so much stronger. I have a deeper faith. I'm a different person than I was. Do I want to raise my hand and say, do it again? I don't know that I would, but at the same time, look at where I am. There's many, and I'm sure you know, people that, even you, there's things we've gone through that killed us. But then we look back and, man, have we grown. How much can we use it? Now it's up to us. Are we going to be a victim? Boo-hoo-hoo. And we do have a private boo-hoo-hoo. But I always say for Christians, cry in private, but stand up and take the blow in public. Because that's the blow of Christ.
You know,
and we have to understand that.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you phrase that. And I like I said, I remember the cycles that we went through in the 80s and 90s and into the first decade of the 21st century, and how, from a psychological standpoint, we shifted. We did shift because then what came along was that interpersonal connection, that interconnectedness that we all share, and that, you know, no, my parents, it wasn't their fault. They did the best that they could with what they had to work with, what their parents gave them, what their schools, what their churches gave them. And now I'm doing the same thing, and it's not their fault. It's now up to me. Am I going to take responsibility for my life, and am I going to move forward, or am I going to sit here and, you know, as you put it, boo-hoo, and it's over, poor me, you know? And it's just really fascinating how we do get into that rut, and then it's reinforced. It actually is reinforced by the society around us, and makes it acceptable to be the victim, in spite of the fact that then we have people such as yourself and myself who are sitting here going, hey, you're not a victim. You know, you can, and this is what we promote on this program, you can change. You have choices. And granted, you may not know what all of those choices are, but that's why you have to keep searching. I mean, that's why they sent us to school. That's why they sent us to primary and secondary or junior high, what have you, and high school to educate us so that we could choose a particular career that we wanted to go into, that we could choose maybe someplace else that we wanted to live, because maybe in history class we learned about this part of the world. Or in geography, we learned about this part of the world. And maybe mathematics was an interesting thing for me. And combine that with chemistry and trigonometry and blah, blah, blah. I want to be an engineer. I want to design this, that, or the other thing. And I want to help us to go to Moon and Mars and travel the solar system and so on and so forth. Or whatever the case might be. But boy, I tell you what, if you don't get that education, you got no choices. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, you said something earlier that I've made the comment to my listeners, and I used to say this at the end of the interview. You've now heard the interview. You've heard the guest talk about what the guest has talked about. Now you have to deal with it. And if not today, someday, it's going to come up. It's like you were saying before. One of these days, you're going to have to deal with that issue. You know, why not get it over with today? Because I've heard it said that the longer you wait, the harder it gets.
That's interesting. And, you know, there's a phrase that's floating out in society today. And the phrase is, you don't got to take it. You don't got to take that. Women, so many women in my Bible studies, you know, and I've taught that really the front of the Bible should say, you got to take it, you know. But, well, you don't got to take that off your husband. You don't got to listen to that. You don't got to take that off your wife. You don't got to take that off your boss. You don't got to take that from your neighbor. You don't got to take that from that police officer. You don't got to take that. You don't got to take that. So there's this mentality, we don't got to take it. You can't do that to me. You can't. So we got this little chip on our shoulder and we're saying, knock it off. And we're daring everybody to knock it off. And instead of having this humble mentality of servanthood and a willingness to die to self, which is the assignment of the Christian, to say, no, I'll step to the back of the line, you first, and mean it. Say, no, I'd rather him. It's okay. He got promoted and not me. But no, you're going to take that. Your boss can't expect you to pick that up off the floor. What do you mean you got to sweep the floor? What do you mean your wife said that? What do you mean your husband told you that? And so we just go around and it's just floating and floating, and we're ego based and we're feeling based, and God forbid our feelings be hurt, and God forbid our feelings be bad or be, you know, wounded, or God forbid we got to put a little sweat to make something work. Oh no, we got to be comfortable. And so this is the boat that's floating and floating in the deeper and deeper water, and we're having some real problems in society because of that alone. And if we can be willing to be humble and die to ourselves and forgive,
yeah,
and give grace, our lives completely change.
Yeah, it's like if you're still standing, well, it doesn't have to be standing upright, but if you're still taking in a breath and letting one out, you still have choices. If you're listening to this program and you're still alive. You still have choices. You can still, your life is not over. You can still make changes. And I think that's one of the things that we've been talking to people about over the years is just that as bad as sometimes things get, whether it's me living out here in Central California dealing with the wildfires for the past 12 years, or somebody who, yes, can listen to this program in Indonesia and now for the second time in 12 years has been inundated by a tsunami. Oh, my God. God, I can't even imagine what that's like. Or I know Australia a few years back, wildfires all over the place. And of course, earthquakes in this place and the other, volcanoes erupting. And that doesn't even take into the mix man's inhumanity to man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cannot imagine what it must be like living in a place like Syria or Lebanon or any of these other war-ravaged parts of the world, and I'm thankful we don't live there. I hope we never do, although it feels like we're on the brink, but nonetheless, I'm thankful we don't live there. But you still have choices. You still do. As a matter of fact, I remember seeing a documentary about a film crew that they wanted to see what it was like for immigrants to come up from Central America across the length of Mexico to get into the United States. Now, they had nothing to escape from. They just wanted to have an experience of this. And apparently there are, I believe it or not, there are tour groups that do this, right? And then they met some of the immigrants who were coming up as they were on their tour. And with the challenges that they had to face, they were willing to make that trek. They were willing to sacrifice their lives to get here. You know, this just wasn't let's go to the U.S. What the heck? You know, I got nothing else to do this weekend. Let's just go up there and we'll stay. They're escaping probably a definite death to risk death by a myriad of different things. They're willing to make that choice. I wonder how many of us in our own lives are willing to make different kinds of choices that wouldn't cost us our lives to make a difference in the world.
What a good question. And, you know, I think in the end, we're going to really be asked one main question, or two or three that are all connected. How did you forgive? And how did you love?
Yeah.
All of that comes off. So many other things come off of those pieces, because in the end, that's what it's about. You know, how did we forgive those people? How did we overcome from that situation? What were we willing to give of ourselves? Because in the end, that sentence is connected. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, because it's connected. One is not without the other. And so when we are there kneeling and wanting to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant, and we're wanting to hear our sins are forgiven, the connector is also going to be questioned. How did you forgive? How did you overcome? How did you deal with those difficult people and those people that are ever overcoming tremendous and horrible atrocities of life and suffering? And, you know, I often ask this question in my classes. What is the group of people that has the deepest faith? You know, you get different answers and different things. But this is the answer. It's the poor. Because the people that have without are the ones that understand faith so much more than those who have so much. That's why the illustration, the rich man, it's harder for the poor man to, the rich man cannot go through the eye of the needle, or I'm saying it backwards, I guess. But the point is, you know, when you have lots of possessions and lots of comforts and lots of things in life, boy, you don't have nearly as much opportunity to live by faith compared to those that are suffering and struggling. And they see the hand of God actively in their lives. I know I have a ministry connection with Pakistan. And when I connect with them, you know, when I'm going to speak through Skype, they wait for hours and hours in the heat. And there's three different rooms. They go off and they get a screen from somewhere several hours away. And I saw through the camera all of these people sitting in this heat. They're sitting on the dirt floor so that I can speak to them the word of God. No complaining about a thermostat, no complaining about a building, no complaining about how long I'm speaking. They're hungry for truth, and they have nothing, and they share the little bits of rice and food and bread that they have with each other. But here with those in the modern world or the convenient world, we're all confused about faith. And I just really hope that my listeners, you know, the book is dripping in grace, and it is my journey through overcoming the horrors that happened to me, my journey through the present healing, and in the permanent grace that I now drip in as I walk. And I pray that I walk through the rest of my life dripping in grace.
Well, I am thankful that you've taken so much time to share with us your story and the information from, of course, your book. Tell us how people can get a hold of you on the web.
You can find me through my website. And it's Kim, I'm so sorry with my voice, it's kimchadwellministries.org. You can find me there, or you can find me on Facebook. And my book is on Amazon. It's Dripping in Grace. And it's also an ebook and an Audible as well.
Oh, fantastic. It's one of the things that I love doing is Audibles, producing them. And so fantastic. And I love listening to them as well.
Thank you so much.
Really great. What we want to do is let people know that they can get a hold of you. Again, it's kimchadwell.com.
Kim Chadwell Ministries. Ministries.org.
Kim Chadwell, that's K-I-M, Chadwell, C-H-A-D-W-E-L-L, ministries.org. We encourage you to go there. We will be linked to your website as well, and we encourage people to get more information, connect with you, and find out more about Dripping in Grace here on Tell Me Your Story. That's been our guest here on the program. I do have three final questions for you that I ask all of my guests, and I again, thank you so much for your time today. First question is, who is Kim Chadwell?
Kim Chadwell is an overcomer, a victor, a leader, a teacher, and I am a person that had every opportunity to be wanting and willing to walk with a limp, but I've chosen to walk and run freely in Christ.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To help those overcome and be free of pain from their past, and to understand that it's total victory with any situation that has been dealt to you.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I have two assignments from Christ, from God, and mine is holiness and accountability. And if you listen to anything that I put out and record or write, that my assignment is for Christians to raise the bar. Here, for example, about forgiveness. There's many, many seasoned Christians in ministry that have never really dealt with the depth of what forgiveness is. And so for me, that is my absolute mission and assignment, is to for people to understand and experience the fullness of forgiveness and to raise the bar within their personal Christian walk.
Kim Chadwell, thank you again for joining us. KimChadwellMinistries.org is the website. We really do appreciate your time and many blessings to you. And we look forward to staying in touch with you, following you on your journey.
Yes, thank you, Richard. And I hope, and I know the next time I'm sure that I won't have this raspy voice from laryngitis. And thank you for being patient with me with my voice today. It's been a total pleasure to be talking with you.
Well, I'll tell you, you sounded just fine here on the program. And again, thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.